This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 394 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Annabelle E.
And now, on to our read-along. Chapter 103, entitled Put to Question.
Put to the question. Yep. Neil Forbes is sitting fat and sassy, not a care in the world, or so he thinks. And then Roger shows up, asking about his wife. And Ian's there too. He says, "Where's Stephen Bonnet?" And Forbes is all, "Huh? How did they know?" And he says, "Who is Stephen Bonnet?" Yeah, that's not going to fly.
Not given the close relations of the Fraser family and River Run and all the things Neil Forbes has been involved with, they all know about Stephen Bonnet. They all know he had something to do with Bree. Gossip is gossip, and everyone hears it. So I'm just saying, he knows exactly what the Stephen Bonnet-Brianna connection is, 100%.
Ian says that he heard him make his deal with Richard Brown. So he's like, you're not going to... You can't tell me that you don't know these people. Like, too bad, so sad. You will not be faking your way out of this one. He tries to fake it. It doesn't work. One last time, they ask, where has he taken her? Forbes still refuses. So Ian and Roger, they settle in to wait a bit.
Oofly. Ian in this scene. Loved it. Loved it a lot.
Meanwhile, Jamie kidnaps the delightful Mrs. Elspeth Forbes, Neil's mummy, and takes her on a picnic. And she giggles as he picks her up. That was very, it was funny. It's cute.
I mean, I only felt uncomfortable about this knowing his purpose. So the fact that this moment never gets resolved in the rest of this episode of our talking about the book makes me sad because it was not resolved by the end of the chapters this week.
So Forbes is beginning to become a little bit more belligerent. Their plan had been that if word from Jamie hadn't come within the hour, they would remove Forbes from the inn and take him to a more private place to do business. And just before that time comes, a small boy comes in and talks to Roger and hands him a small, twisted piece of paper. And Roger pays him. Inside the paper was a small brooch. It belonged to Mummy Forbes. The lawyer is all, "Oh, you wouldn't dare. He wouldn't dare."
Wouldn't I?
And they wouldn't say, he? Well, I mean, he says, "Jamie, Mr. Fraser is a gentleman." And they're all, "Well, he's also a Highlander." So there's
right.
That.
And you didn't consider them gentlemen when you were, you know, invading their country and killing them all.
So, well, Forbes is Scottish, by the way.
He is. But the whole point is that nobody cared about whatever he's doing now when he was living amongst the rest of it. Like, he had no concerns about how other things affected him because he was in a place of prominence in the society. Am I wrong? I don't know.
So he says, basically, he's a Highlander. So who knows what he'd do to an old woman? Or maybe he would just have her schlepped off to Canada. And that is what makes Forbes give in. He says, "Brianna is safe aboard Bonnet's ship, the Anemone, bound for England." And they ask, "Okay, well, when did they sail?" And he goes, 2 days ago. So Roger thinks that he may still have time if Bonnet had to pick up some supplies down the road, meaning up the coast or something. They still might have time to catch up with him.
I mean, before they start the long journey.
Yeah.
Because up and down the coast isn't a long journey, but like across the Atlantic Ocean to get to London is a completely different story.
He punches Forbes and says, "Let's go." Ian says, "Oh, I." And he is not as quick as Ian. But before he goes, he just really, as if it were a normal occurrence, cuts off one of Forbes' ears.
I mean, it was a normal occurrence for him. You don't think so?
I don't know. We don't have a lot in the chapter about that.
We don't, but it was not a big deal to Ian, which means it was not.
It's not a normal occurrence for Ian to cut someone's ear off. No, that is not true. But the practice of getting a talisman is not abnormal.
That's what I'm saying. That the reason he did it should not be abnormal to Ian because we know his background. But I don't think he was unaffected, but I think it's something he's done a lot to be this unaffected, if that makes sense. Moving right along to chapter 104, entitled Sleeping with a Shark.
So back on that anemone, Bonnet does continue to leave Brianna alone physically. And she doesn't want to sleep with him, but when it is time to go to sleep, she does have to stay on the bed with him, and he puts his arm around her. He doesn't let her like get away. And if she happens to shift, he like shifts with her. When she's allowed to leave the room, she goes down to the hold and she sees Josh there, and they speak in Gaelic, and so no one else is understanding them. And she believes they're going to Ocracoke. She brings down some food to Josh as well. Some of her food she gives to Josh. And that was kind of sad. He was the one assuring her that he'll be safe. He'll be okay. And he's like, "I've got the rosary. I'm praying. It'll be okay."
Is it wrong to think it's because he felt like he had more value alive than dead?
Of course. If he's dead, he has no... To
whoever's going to buy him. Like, if he's being sold as a slaver's trade...
Yes.
Then the point is that
he has no value dead.
Right. Which is why he'll be safe, which is my thought.
So she goes back upstairs and she's allowed some freedom to roam, to go walk on the deck and walk around. But as I said, when it was time for bed or time to sleep, he didn't make moves on her, Bonnet, but he did assure that she would stay there or not go prowling.
Moving right along to chapter 105, entitled The Prodigal.
Ian and Roger find out some info about the anemone. Make sure I say that correctly. Pretty easily. Bonnet's, of course, well known in the area there. And one dude remembers seeing a woman with red hair boarding that boat. And so they still need to find out where he was headed to. Someone says London, but not directly. And we learned that.
I mean, that's not inaccurate.
No, that's exactly correct.
His intention was to go to London. He just doesn't plan on fulfilling that, really.
So they've connected with Jamie, and they consider splitting up the group and going up and down the coast. Like, two of them go north, two of them go south. As they are chatting, Reverend McCorkle approaches them, and he's getting ready to go home to leave for the Indies. And so basically, what this is communicating to us is that although it's unfortunate, Roger obviously will not be being ordained this go round. it's not a conclave.
Well, whatever the thing is, whatever the big meeting is where they make the decision, isn't happening anymore. And it's because he has to see to Bree. So this, like I said, in reading the most current book, there was a part of me that had forgotten that this whole thing happened. And I'm like, why didn't he just finish it the first time? Because this is one of the books I've read the least amount of
once.
Times. Yeah. Right. Just once. So reliving it now, I'm like, oh, okay. The newest book, Bees, makes a lot more sense right now just because of this book.
So Roger is definitely not going to be ordained this year. Ginger, mm-hmm. Just delete that. By the way, what happened to Forbes' ear? Ian says it's safe in his pouch.
He smoked it.
He will keep it with them, he says, until they find Bree. He says it will help. Okay. And he's like, and don't worry, I smoked it over the kitchen fire, so it's preserved. Blech. It's all good.
And he smoked it.
They're heading back to the inn where they'd left Claire.
Do you think it smells like pork rinds or something?
I've been around pork rinds. I've never smelled them.
But what do you think like a smoked human ear smells like? Obviously smoke.
Oh, that I can't enter that. I have never smelled one.
I mean, I don't think you know. I'm just curious if you had a thought.
I'm so far removed from meat, Summer, even though obviously like I smell it when a neighbor makes it. Like I smell it in a barbecue every once in a while.
Right.
I'm so far removed from meat. I don't, you're literally asking the worst person. I'm the worst person to ask about what I think.
Okay.
Smoked anything.
I'll go with you on that. That's fine.
So they're heading back to the inn where they left Claire. And whom do they see sitting with her? Manfred the Sif McGillivray. And Eppy.
Oh my God. Who's never been so excited to see a character ever?
Eppy?
Because I didn't even know I was excited to see him. But him being connected to the whore, being connected to the other things, I was just like, okay then, let's do it. And then they're going to add to Fraser Ridge by telling her that she could be a respectable wife to him on the ridge because they're totally accepting. And she'd rather you be alive than dead.
So the ring is on the
Manfred
table.
Manfred be alive than dead.
And this is the ring that Bree had given Eppy. She's like, so now they have proof of life. Brianna, at least when Eppy saw her, was alive and okay. And Eppy tells them, she passes on the message that Bree wanted her to. And that is that the ship was going to Ocracoke at the dark of the moon. And she's like, and sir, and Jamie's like, yes, 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 we'll be paying you, woman. It's okay. and they reckon that's about 10 days away. And she also says that Bonnet has a house there on Ocracoke, hidden, a large one. It's hidden in the trees. They make sure that Manfred has been truthful with Eppy regarding the pox. And she's all, oh, yeah, that I knew about it. Like, if I get it, I get it. Shrug.
She's like, it's not like, the worst thing I've ever gotten.
It's not, yeah. And Claire has beaucoup de penicillin. And so she's talking about it. And Manfred's all, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold up. Hold up. Wait a second. Are you telling me you can cure it?
What an idiot. If he'd stayed for like 2 seconds on the ridge, he would know this.
To tell you before you effed off.
Mm-hmm.
That's your fault, Manfred. Suck it
boo.
Up.
I mean, yay, because it's a Grange moment, but also boo.
He freaks out in a good way and says, woohoo, I can go home. And he tells Eppy, we can go home. Let's get married and go home. And she's like, look, I'm a hoora. Your mom doesn't sound too, the way, what I heard of your mom, she does not sound too fond of people like me. And Claire's all, Frau will be so happy to have Manfred back. Right? There likely won't be many questions.
I'm just saying, if they have options, and if one of the options is they get their kid back, that's more important than being mad at why or who they married.
And he tells her, you don't have to be a whore anymore. I'm a gunsmith and I'll earn us a good living. And that's the truth. But just the way he's like, I don't know, just that way they talk about it, it's funny.
He could have done it this whole time. That's what makes me mad, is that him saying that means he could have literally done this the whole time and he hasn't, for whatever reason.
Claire takes them away to prick them. And Jamie says, hopefully we can leave this evening. And Eppy remembers something. She's like, oh, yeah, there's wild horses near that house. Just in case that might help you guys. Just by the way. Scene change to Bree. Bree wakes up. She's still on the boat and she's kind of moves and she moves away from him and she's pulled back down to the bed or toward him or whatever. And he's having a nightmare. He relaxes a little bit and wakes up and he tells her of his bad dream about waters, muddy waters specifically, closing over his head. He says since he was a boy, he'd dreamt of drowning and it's his horror. It's his nightmare. And she comforts him and says, quote, I won't let you drown. I promise. Unquote.
Take note of that. Moving right along to chapter 106 entitled Rendezvous.
The fam has made their way toward Ocracoke. Jamie has to be put ashore because he just barfs too much. He's just going to walk along and see what he can see while they continue to look for a likely docking place since he's barfing so much. He's like, I don't need to be here while y'all go back and forth just looking. He said he'd walk the length of the island to keep an eye out. And then after another day of sailing up and down the coast, Ian can make out some houses. They leave Claire on the boat with the captain. They leave Claire behind. So they go on, Ian and Roger go ashore to walk around to see what they can see. Roger is off on his lonesome and finds an area where he thinks a boat could come ashore. He like walks into it, ends up like he's like up to his neck in water, and he's like, oh, maybe here. And he goes up, and as he's coming or walking up, he thinks he can hear horses. And he's like, well, maybe I did. And then he sees them four standing stones. He's like, okay, horses. Need to leave. It was the stones, likely, that Donner had told Bree about. He's like, yeah, that's my signal. I'm happy to go home now, or I'm happy to go back and find Ian. Let's get back to the boat. So meanwhile, Claire is there on the boat. I say ship boat. I don't know what it is. It's a slip, I think they call it.
Did you just say boat?
No, ship boat.
Because I promise you, I heard boat, and the closed captioning on yours wrote boat.
I need to see. See, I'm not even looking at, I don't have closed captioning.
If you do turn it on, I think it's through Zencastr. It might be a Google-based thing, or it could be a Microsoft Word thing. No, that was basically it. I'm just saying I see closed captions for all the things, and when it mirrors what I heard, I have to ask about it. Especially since my hearing is notoriously bad.
Claire is there on the ship while everyone else is doing all their walking on the land. She's drinking cool beer. But she's frustrated waiting for the dudes. Captain Rourke, who was in fact a, quote, Captain Rourke, who was in fact a misbegotten son of a boxed whore, as he cheerfully admitted himself, sat down with me for a time and accepted a bottle of beer, unquote.
Like, that's an aggressive flex.
I mean, I don't know, aggressive. It's pretty entertaining.
No, I said it's aggressive. Like, he's not holding anything back. He's like, here's what I'd do. Here's my background. It's aggressive.
He says, your dudes aren't really seamen, are they? Because I heard them talking about this whole Dark of the Moon. And basically, he talks a lot of stuff about tides and boats. But he's like, the place you want to look is like right there. He like points to it. And Claire's all, the fuh?
Exactly.
Thanks, dude.
Oh,
you could have told us earlier? He's like, yeah, I could have.
He never thought of that before then? Like, it was,
I don't know,
just a moment that happened while they were alone. He was like, you know, if your husband was smart, he would have, you know, been more specific in his questions.
He says, I didn't know you wanted to know. So later on, they collect Roger and Ian and then go meet Jamie. And then they chat about their findings and they spend another night on the boat, ship boat, whatever that is.
I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
And it might be the next chapter that this actually occurs, or it could be this one. The only reason I'm asking, no, I think it's this one, because this is the chapter where they notice the smell of the slaver ship.
Yeah.
So the only thing I'm noting in this is that Claire didn't know what it was and then said, oh, yeah, that's what it is. But then either later in this chapter or the next chapter, Brianna is like, my mom told me that slaver ship smelled bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Are those two things real?
Yeah, I don't understand what the question. What is the question?
Well, the question is because Claire seemed to just discover the smell of the slave ships while on the boat with the dude.
No, she recognizes the smell.
Okay, because that's not how I listened to it with Davina.
Yeah, she recognizes the smell because from the time when she and Jamie went to Jamaica.
It seems weird to me.
In Voyager.
That she didn't really recognize it at first and then got her memory jogged, and then Brianna conveniently remembered that her mom had told her that slave ships smelled gross or whatever.
So the ship actually came that night and not the next night. And as Summer said, it was a slaver. Rourke also has no idea why that ship would have come here. Hours later, they decide to go up toward it and try to board or try to talk to somebody. Hours later, they come aboard it. They ask to come aboard. They're told no. And Roger's like, fine, I'm going to like shoot my shot. He's like, Brianna! And they're fired upon. And so they, of course, try and They row away, or they go away. They get away. Jamie asks if they can ask the captain, look, can we keep our boat out of range, but of the cannon and the shooting, but keep the slaver in sight? so we can just keep an eye on it to see if any shenanigans happen, even though we can't see, obviously, very close. And they do, and they hang out.
I said, can you make the best case scenario possible happen? Like, can you follow them, but also not know that you're being followed? Can you,
oh, yeah.
Can you perform this perfect sequence of events to make sure that we can do what we need and they don't notice?
So they do hang out, but nothing happens. To the best that they're able to tell, nothing happens.
And that was chapter 106, moving right along to chapter 107, entitled The Dark of the Moon.
Bree's ship, the Anemone, anchors before dawn, and they go ashore. They are now on Ocracoke. They are close enough. They end up going to a house or go up to near a house and hop out. And she recognizes, this is what Summer was saying, she recognizes the smell of a slaver from her mother's description. And she's asking about the enslaved people, the people, I guess, who are in the hold. And Bonnet says, oh, yeah, they're going to be sold. And she's, of course, horrified that this is going to happen. But she has no recourse right now. She's, you know, kidnapped. She's under surveillance, like everything. She's being watched. She doesn't have any control over anything. So she goes along. She follows him. And once they get to the house.
He's a d- though.
Who?
Stephen Bonnet.
Oh, he always has been.
He tweaked her nipple because she wasn't going in the direction he wanted her to go.
Well, he could have done a lot worse. It was mean.
I know, but that was mean. She's pregnant. Your boobies hurt. Don't do that.
So once they get to the house, she meets Emmanuel. He's kind of like the boss of the Heidi house, or at least the person there. He's under Stephen Bonnet, but he carries out all the beatings. And Emmanuel basically is there to keep everything in line. So Bonnet has Emmanuel take Bree somewhere upstairs, and he says also to, you know, put her in a room and feed her. So Emmanuel takes Brianna, puts her in a small room with a bed and a blanket and a chamber pot. That's basically it. The window that's there has metal bars over it, and out the window she sees the horses. So she goes, after a little bit, she like tries the door and it's not locked. And so she goes wandering downstairs to the kitchen. La-di-da. I was like, how smart is this? I mean, I guess it's smart if you don't get caught. But as she goes down to the kitchen, she sees Fedra. And of course, they're shocked to see each other.
Well, I was shocked only because I'd forgotten about the plot where she disappeared. From River. Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff we all we forget about because there's lots to keep track of in this book.
Right. But this whole section of the book was produced in season 5. So the things they brought forward that are going to be in the book the series are already there. So any of the things they left out at this point are all like, oh, okay. Which means that because I've read this book once and I watched last season, in my brain, that was not what went down at the house.
So how long has she been there? Fedra says that Bonnet had gotten her about a month before, and she confirms that this place is Bonnet's hideaway. And Bree looks around and sees, like, you know, lots of supplies and goods kind of stacked up. So yeah, that confirms it. The captain of the slaver ship had come by to see if Bonnet had anything for him, but Bonnet hadn't gotten back yet. Fedra says he'll be back. And she says to Brianna that Bonnet kept her there so long because there are some very specific men from the Indies who would pay a lot for someone like her, meaning Fedra, because she's what Bonnet calls a fancy. And Bree tells Fedra that Josh had been taken too. He was also kidnapped. Manuel comes in and sees them both and tells Bree, go wash yourself. And he takes her back to the room and locks her in this time. Later on, he brings her some more food. So Bree's having some deep thoughts about God, religion, time travel, metaphysics. And she also is if I'm not mistaken, she's also the first one to bring up in this series, I think, the possibility of going into the future. Now, the possibility, it may have been, readers may have thought about it before, but I think this is the first time Diana even writes those words, like going into the future. Because we know you can go to the future, right? Because Claire went back to the future. So this is the first time I think that Diana writes of this. And does someone going to the past and dying there, like if Claire ends up dying in the 18th century, is something like that, does it need to be balanced out by someone traveling to the future and dying there? So she's having all sorts of metaphysical questions. It's very interesting.
Or was she always fated to die there, wherever that is?
Well, it's not about Claire. She's thinking about the whole time travel thing. If someone goes back and dies in the past, is it balanced out by someone having to go forward and dying in the future? That's what she's asking. It's not about Claire. I use Claire as an example.
My personal opinion about the TT, which I guess is what I was saying, is that what if she was always meant to go back, which means she always died in the past, which means we wouldn't need a balance in the future if she was always meant to die in the past.
She's also talking to her new baby in her tum-tum. And Phaedra later comes up to bring her some food. And she tells her about some Fulani twins and some planter from the Indies. But before she leaves, Brianna asks her, who took her from River Run? What happened to Phaedra? And she's all, oh, Ulysses. Why? What happened? And Phaedra says, it's because I'm stupid. It's because
I tried to be him.
I crossed Ulysses. Basically, she was boffing Duncan. It just happened. She's like, it just happened. You can't help these things. And but she mistook Duncan as the new master. Or she understood that Duncan would be the new master. And she goes like, I should have known better. My mom always told me never to cross Ulysses. She's like, it was always Ulysses. Always Ulysses. And so he sold her because she said if he didn't leave her and Duncan alone, she'd tell Duncan about him and Jocasta.
I mean, that seems like a fair exchange.
Except Ulysses doesn't take kindly to being...
You're right. He doesn't. But I'm just saying, hey, you keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep doing what I do. And no one's going to complain about it because everyone's happy. Which is what I think would have been a better outcome for that intervention.
I think so. If he could have let it go, but he couldn't let it go.
No.
And
you're
then...
right.
She says that Stephen Bonnet won her in a card game. But before she leaves, Bree asks her if any of the enslaved people at River Run had known about the Frenchman's gold. And she's like, an old master's tomb? Surely. But she said, no one touched it because everyone knows there's a curse on it. But she is surprised to hear about his disappearance. She had no idea about that. Later on, Emmanuel brings Brianna a dress, previously worn, not quite fitting perfectly, previously sweat into. I mean, it was, it looked
but
decent,
it was clean.
Meaning like it was, well, oh, it was clean. It was sweat on.
Well, it said there were signs of sweat stains, which means they could have been long put in sweat stains. Like maybe the sweat was too much for whatever the soap of the era was. I assume they gave her clean clothes because why else let her bathe?
So she didn't add to the funk.
Yeah, but then why give her funky clothes?
I don't think the dress was funky. I think the dress was as clean as they could get, but it wasn't a freshly laundered dress is what I'm saying.
Well, my only opinion on is that it was a dress that I believed was given to her clean, but stained in a way they could not remove.
So once she got dressed, he took her downstairs and Bonnet's there waiting for her with another man. And likely this was the Indies man. And Bonnet tries to show her off. And Bree's not playing. She ends up biting the guy's thumb. And this guy wants to beat her. But Bonnet's like, nope, gotta protect my wares. Mm-hmm.
So she absolutely bit deeply into his thumb. However, in the third person narrative of it, they never say that she actually bit his thumb off. However, the recipient of the bite then said, she bit my thumb off. Was his thumb really bit off, or was he just being dramatic for having his thumb bitten?
All we have is his reaction. I don't see it. We don't have evidence that it was off, because if it were in his mouth, she would have had something in her mouth. That's
right.
It would have been a little more, but he definitely... I could imagine if your thumb is bit into, that you might think it has been bitten off or part of it had been bitten off. But And I don't know that I'd call him dramatic. If he's if his thumb is being bitten and he's bleeding, I don't know that that I don't know that
pretty
that, that's
specific
dramatic.
About feeling her molars break through the skin. And
well, Diane
it,
is
it was
always
a really descriptive,
descriptive yes
about the encounter.
So after she bites him, he wants to like go off and start to beat her, but Bonnet's like, no, 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 you don't own her quite yet. So Bonnet takes her out and tells Emmanuel to teach her manners. He's like, do what you need to do, but don't do it in the face, to her face. So the next scene, after some beating, we have to assume, she was, next time we see her, or our, she's
we
described
don't have
to us.
Assume it. They tell us later in this chapter what he beat her with.
Yeah, but we don't know if it, where it was, or how hard it was, or how long it was. I'm just saying, after the beating, the next time we see her, we don't see the beating is what I'm saying. The next time we see her, she is gagged, bent over a table, dressed probably, I guess, up around her head. And he's this same dude who almost lost a thumb, apparently, is fondling her privates. And he really likes her booty, but he does
well,
other
first
stuff
he was
as well.
Messing with her booty. And then once he saw the his hands make the skin lighter in those places so that it was red from the beatings, then he was like, ooh, let me check that out. And then he got aggressively internal with her. But that was not how it started. And when he did that, Bonnet immediately was like, dude, you can't do that. You don't own this person.
Bonnet takes him out. But then once he's back, she's threatening him. And Bonnet says, I think a sore arse is repayment, is a good repayment or a fine repayment for my left ball. So call it even. So there are two more potential customers that he wants to show her to before the auction. And yes, apparently there's going to be an auction. So back in her room, she hears the horses again. She is thinking and looking thinking of how to potentially escape. There's no way out of this room. She does hear that she either from seeing the clouds, seeing the sky, she says, or it's described that the rain is coming soon getting close. And she takes the ivory busk out of her stays and starts to sharpen it against the brick. And so at least she has a decent weapon. And she knows, she does know. She asks herself, like, could I actually stab someone with it? And then she decides she absolutely could.
For sure. I don't blame her. Moving right along to chapter 108 entitled Damn Tall. I feel like there should be an exclamation point in that chapter.
Roger and Ian et al. Are getting closer to finding Bree. They see they're still in that boat. They see the captain of the slaver go ashore. And then later, a second ship from the slaver, or I should say a second boat, was sent to the shore. This one with a chest in it, like a small chest in it. And whenever I think of boats and chests and things that come ashore, I think booty.
Booty, like butts or like pirate booty?
The word booty.
But I need you to explain. Are
no,
we talking
I just
about
think of
butts?
Booty. Or ships like, and booty. You make it whatever connection you make. I can't tell you what to make.
You're mean. I want to know what you
I'm
meant.
I'm not mean.
You are mean because I can make whatever connection I want. I want to know
exactly.
What you meant.
I meant booty. Claire is looking through the telescope and she can tell that the dude who went ashore is a gentleman with a servant. So he's very nicely dressed and all of that. They get Rourke, the guy who is, he's the captain, but he's the captain of their boat, their small boat, however big it is, to take them further north so they can go ashore. So they can go ashore without, you know, attracting too much attention. They do so and they settle down and wait. They go ashore and they wait in the woods. Now, Roger is, once they're in the woods, Roger is struggling with having a deliberate desire to murder. He envies Jamie and Ian their warrior gods. Now, they're all, Ian, we could have a conversation about, but all three of them, at least at one point in time, were/are Christian, right? So they do actually believe in the same God, with the exception of even of Ian probably believing in a few more gods or entities. But Roger is having a very hard time coming to terms with the fact that he wants to. He has this desire to murder, and he doesn't feel bad about it. He just struggles with the having of it And he, that's why he, or maybe he does feel a little bit bad about it, but he is struggling with it. Whereas Jamie and Ian are like, oh, we need to go save somebody. Okay, whatever happens, happens, dude. Family first, that kind of, you know, save our people, even if you need to do some stuff. A little bit later, the captain of the slaver, the dude who looked nice in his outfit, whatever, comes back. He's walking back toward the shore, toward the boat, and it has begun to rain. Meanwhile, with Brianna, there in her room, she fell asleep again. As I said before, it had begun to rain. So she's asleep in a house and she feels drops on her face. So she realizes that there are holes. There have to be holes or patches in the roof where water's getting through. And she realizes, oh, maybe this roof isn't the most
intact. This whole chapter gets surreal real fast. Well, because we go from acknowledging that the roof isn't solid to climbing out of the roof to fighting with Emmanuel on the roof to getting away from him and sliding down. Like, it was just
all of it. It's one thing on top of another. Agreed. So she's like, huh, let me see. So without being on the bed, she can reach the ceiling is 7 feet tall, which is like
so
apparently
she's so tall.
Normal for the time. She's so tall, she can reach the ceiling. She can touch the ceiling without getting on the bed. So just by standing in her bare or flat feet, whatever. So once she touched a piece of wet plaster, it gave way immediately. I'm like, oh, well, that's great. Good to know. And here's the gross part. When it gives way, not only does some water come down with it and some leaves, but also some things like centipedes and other little roly-polies, she's lucky. I mean, she is lucky, I guess. I don't know. Not to be kidnapped, but for me, if I were in that situation, first of all, I wouldn't be. Not that I'm better. I don't know that I'd survive that long. If I were in that situation, I would have been caught right now because I would have screamed. I would have or at least like a short little gasp that everyone around would have heard. Maybe not downstairs in the corner, opposite end of the house, but probably Emmanuel would have heard it. And
hard
did you
say.
Hear what I just did? I said Emmanuel and then Emmanuel. So a name, I think the name is Emmanuel, but there's a song, 1980s song from Amy Grant, Emmanuel, Emmanuel. That's all I remember of it. My point is, that's why when I see this and I say
you
it,
mean where
that's
I
why
sing.
It sounded. Well, I know that, but that's where I got the pronunciation from.
That sounded a lot like sing because you were singing the word see. You'll hear it when you listen back. You'll see. You'll see. You'll see.
Okay. Okay. So a lot of stuff came down.
No, but it didn't stop her from climbing
that
on
plaster,
through.
And that's disgustable.
Ugh. She is burrowing out of like a ground.
Oh, girl, she's got to get... A bitch has got to escape herself
wrong.
And her
I'm just
progeny.
Saying. No one normally thinks that kind of stuff.
So she starts to...
Nobody sits in a room they've been locked into and looks at the ceiling and goes, I wonder if I can climb through there.
I wonder if it's, I can break it. Well, first, yeah, exactly. Because usually not an option. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And she's lucky she's on the second floor.
Well, the first floor, she wouldn't
she
have
the,
had a
she
drop to
floor?
Worry about. However.
Come on.
Wow. She barely escaped
from the
second
floor. No, but she wouldn't have been able to
floor.
Escape. Like, not the same way. So she works to make a hole. This part she does need the bed for. So she stands on the bed and she works to make the hole large enough for herself, like her head and shoulders, I think Diana writes. So she vertically dives up. So vertically dives up, that's kind of redundant, isn't it?
She jumps
oxymoron,
up.
She vertically dives. She dives
that's
vertically.
Not a dive.
She dives up. However you want it.
No, no.
She dives.
You can't dive.
She dives vertically
through,
up through the hole.
You can't. No, you can't. You're not a superhero, and neither
sure
is she.
You can.
So you can jump up through. It's not that kind of fiction. We have not.
It's fiction.
No.
No, she dove her hands together so that when she got through up high enough, she grabbed for whatever she could
to
gain.
I don't believe you can dive
something
up
solid.
Ever. Dives in general are down and out. They are never up. They're just not. That's not how gravity works, which means She has to jump up and then pull herself up.
So she pulls herself up.
Stop it!
After she dives vertically.
She didn't dive vertically.
She gains purchase to pull herself up the rest of the way
from Diana Gabaldon's mouth that she dove vertically. I'm going to need you to take it out right now. It's not true.
Let me see. I'm not taking it out. What are you talking about? You can disagree with me, but I'm not taking it out.
I'm sorry.
Right now, I can't even get the mudgy wumpit to come up. Hold on.
What's that?
Another word I made up. Okay. Apparently, you heard it. Hold on a second. I don't know. We're going to find out. Okay. Listen to this. This is dive. To dive. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They're short. There are 8-ish definitions. To plunge into water intentionally and especially head first. Okay, that's water. To submerge. Okay, that's probably also water, or to go under something, right? To come or drop down. Okay, that says down. To plunge one's hand into something. Okay, so it's her body, not her hand. But she plunged herself up.
People don't generally plunge up, though. Plunge implies down through.
So we're not done yet. Well, airplane doesn't matter because she's not an airplane. We're almost done. To plunge into some matter or activity. So that's metaphorical, right? Metaphorical. She dives into her studies. Like, obviously, that's not physical diving. Also, to lunge, especially in order to seize something.
People don't lunge up. People lunge forward.
She wanted to seize the top of
that's
the roof. Dove vertically through the roof.
She jumped up and caught hold of a rafter or some joist or something and pulled herself up.
You're right. She jumped as well, but she dove through the hole.
I'm going to disagree.
You can disagree. That's fine.
I'm going to have to.
So she gains
because that's not
purchase and pulls herself up onto the roof.
I hate this conversation.
She sees a structure at the end of the building and very slowly, like realizing like, oh, I better be flat on this bitch, starts to wriggle her way over. And she could see from where she was or where she had gotten to the two boats. I wrote, she could see the two boots ashore. Okay, just so our non-German speaking listeners know what I just did. Das Boot or the boat, ein Boot. In German.
I'm sorry, say that one more time in English.
That was all German.
No, you said the boat. It was so Valley Girl that I don't even think any other Valley Girl has ever Valley Girled that hard in their Valley Girl life.
So in German, das Boot is the boat and ein Boot is
the boat.
Is a boat.
Okay, Kim.
Oh, we'll say that.
Can you glottal fry it next
time? Never. You mean vocal fry?
Because then you'll 100% be Kim Kardashian.
So I wrote, she sees the two boots ashore. And I meant two boats. But apparently my language has got askewified.
The boats. The boats.
Oh, Lord. Bree sees wee Josh among a group.
That sounded like it was hard to say.
I was trying to.
Bree sees we?
I have she. And I was like, who the f*** is she? Oh, it's Bree. Okay. She sees wee Josh among the group, a group of chained men coming out of the forest.
Gotcha.
And then she hears screaming and sees Fedra running out of the woods toward this line of chained men. So obviously, Fedra's running for Josh. Just then, Emmanuel's head pokes up over the side of the roof. He did not dive. Because he's outside. He doesn't need to go through anything. And she had drawn, because she had this weapon we talked about last chapter, I think. She had taken the ivory busk out of her corset and had sharpened it next to on the plaster, on the brick, whatever. And so she had it with her, thankfully, when she dove out through the ceiling. And she has this busk weapon ready. And she's like, okay, come on, Emmanuel, just come get it. Back in the woods, Jamie et al. Hear a man singing a French ditty. I'm like, that's some rando stuff. I kept experiencing. Is this someone we're supposed to know? No, it's one of the gentleman dudes. Who knows? So as the man gets closer to them, what?
Gentleman dudes. Your words.
They're wonderful.
Your combination of words sometimes, they don't go together, but they do. It's a weird thing. I don't know how else to explain that.
That's why I get paid the big bucks of $0.
Gentlemen dudes.
So
I don't write this stuff. I just repeat it.
I don't write it either. That's the thing. I just say it.
You must.
No, I say
you
it.
You felt it. You felt it.
I felt it totally, but I didn't write it. My line. Give me my line. My text, my note says, as the man gets closer to them, Jamie grabs him, blah, 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 blah. I didn't write as the gentleman dude. So see, I totally.
Well, you should have committed 100% in that way.
I totally improv this stuff. I mean, I have the facts in front of me or I have the notes in front of me.
I think.
But I do improv.
I think.
Uh-huh.
You and I should invest in improv classes because I don't think you understand how it works.
No, I know improv is you're only like given a...
You get prompts.
Yeah, you get prompts. That's what I'm trying to say.
But you're supposed to fill in the blanks and I'm concerned about the way you fill in the blanks. I feel like you could do better because improv, the actual answer you should always give is yes and.
I know we talked about this.
But you don't do that with me.
Oh, that's different.
Because sometimes I improv with you and you just give me silence and then move on to your next phrase.
It depends on how things are going.
Oh, girl.
So the gentleman dude gets closer to them. Jamie grabs him and we find out that yes, indeedy, weenie. See, that was not planned either.
Yes, indeedy, weeniedy what?
I did not say that. he has been there to see Bonnet and to, I guess, do business dealings with him. And they ask him, have you seen or did you see a damn tall red-haired woman? And they get
And did you notice her diving up through the roof?
No, because that was in the privacy of her room. What are you talking about? Don't be silly. Back with Bree. Bree and Emmanuel play a game of keep away. She goes over the edge, but he's grabbed her. He's trying to hold on to her, but you know, she's damn tall and probably not a small person. So he loses his grip. He lets her go on accidental and she lands on the ground. The wind is knocked out of her. And she sees like this look of glee on his face or something. She's like, oh, well, he thinks I'm dead. Great. I'm going to keep up this charade shenanigan. So she allows him to think that she's dead as she waits to regain her breath. And when he gets down and as he's walking down that ladder or whatever it is to come over to her, she has lost her weapon. And she sees when his back is to her, she sees that it's only about a foot away or so. So she when his back is turned, she grabs it and then goes back to playing possum.
I have a very strange segue.
To a segue? That means you want to change.
It'll be brief. It'll be brief. Okay. And then we can come right back to this.
Sure.
It is that when I was listening to this today, I got back in my car after an errand and I hit play and it started playing a completely different part of the book. And the part of the book it was playing was when Melva was looking at the book, Claire's book, and she was... The picture she was fascinated with was one of somebody removing a dead fetus from a uterus.
Yeah.
I know, but I didn't make that connection when we read that chapter that I made today, where I was like, huh.
Oh, the connection
page.
The connection that she was enamored with?
Yes. Yes. Having a dead baby cut from a person's womb.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it had a whole different meaning to me when it snuck into my phone today.
That's true.
I was not prepared for that.
I found it interesting that is what she was interested in or was stupefied by. But yeah, the irony of that did not hit me till just now either. That Diana gave us that and says, just look.
I know. Completely was over my head, man.
I have a girlfriend.
And it wasn't until I accidentally listened to that chapter today when I was trying to continue the chapters we're listening to for tonight's episode that I was like, wow, that's foreshadowing I didn't notice. That was really bad foreshadowing, like really, or not bad, specific.
Yeah.
It was very real specific.
Roger et al. Are almost at the house where they hear sounds of chains, which would be the chain gang. That's not right. That's not a chain gang. Chained enslaved men, I believe it was. And then a scream. But the scream was not Bree. Roger says that wasn't Bree. Roger went for the screamer, and Jamie and Ian said they'll go for the house. Emmanuel is now bent over Brianna, and she stabs him. She had hoped for the throat or an eyeball, and she gets him under the, I think she said under the arm. I don't know if that means like on the lower side of the arm or like the armpit. I don't know. I have a feeling if it were the armpit, Diana would have said armpit or the auxiliary.
Auxter,
exactly.
So what did you just say?
Auxiliary.
That's not a thing.
It is.
She says but I know, but she says auxter because it's a, they say it a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I know
they
that.
They don't say auxiliary.
I'm trying to think of
auxiliary or whatever.
No, auxiliary. But there's another word that goes with it. Auxiliary is typically an adjective. So it needs a noun, but I can't think of the noun. But yes, auxter is absolutely also a term for it.
I'm pretty sure the word auxter was used in these chapters today because I have recently heard the word.
Up and gone. She runs for the woods. She's not going to wait for him to run after her or catch her. And she hears screams and the battle cry of the Frasers. I think it's Castles, blah, blah, blah. Castel, I don't know. Manuel pops back up and grabs her. And then his face goes wonky. And obviously he's hit by something and he dies. But we don't hear a sound of... Did Ian hit him with an arrow? Because we don't hear a gunshot. We don't see her acknowledging how he died or knowing how he died. So I read that a few times going, who happened to him? I don't know. He died. That's the most important thing. He's not after her. And then Bonnet comes toward her. She tries to flee, but he catches her. She screams for Roger and he's like, hey, little darling. Hey, little darling. She sees that Bonnet may as well have been like a fire drill or an actual fire alarm because Bonnet has brought his most important possession outside with him, his testicle. In a glass, in a jar. Oh, Lordy. Roger, by now, finds her and grabs her. And oopsie-daisy, where did Bonnet go? I don't know. He's run away again. So as she's looking in the direction Bonnet escaped to, she sees the Fulani twins run into the woods. So they were from the house, right? They were brought on the slaver or brought... They're on the same ship as Brianna was on. So the Anemone, I think it is. And they were, if not in the house at the same time, they were brought to the house shortly thereafter when she got there. And so they escape and they run to the woods, and she follows. She can't find anyone else. She knows she saw Roger before, but she can't find anyone else now. So she heads back to the house and she sees Ian near the front door and she sits next to Ian. Now, Ian tells her that he'd gotten Fedra back, but Josh had been taken. So that was awful.
I mean, I think that's even worse than I'm glad we got Phaedra back because, you know, we love Phaedra. I'm only concerned because Phaedra was already gone, but Josh is new and that's hurtful.
Yeah, Josh has even less knowledge of the world than she did.
Yeah, and Phaedra had kind of made her peace with where she was. She didn't like it. It wasn't awesome, and she wasn't happy, but she was almost complacent and not okay with where she
resigned,
was, but
maybe.
She was like, she knew, yes, resigned is the best word, but Joshua, poor Joshua, was just supposed to make sure Bree made it to
I know.
She was heading.
She eventually ends up back with Jamie and Ian and Roger. They caught Bonnet as he tried to escape and they knocked him senseless.
Caught him? It seemed like he fell.
Oh, well, no. Oh, no. They knocked him out.
Did he fall off of a from a height?
No, that was Brianna after she dove.
Okay.
But they caught Bonnet and they fought with him and they knocked him senseless. There is no final word about his testicle. So I'm guessing the glass broken. It's gone. Now, 200 years later, it's, you know, it's fooey. Eaten is organic material, put it that way. The reason they hadn't killed him was because at least until they wanted to give her the right of first refusal. Do you want to kill this dude? Yes. Okay, here. If it's a no, then they would do it. They were totally put. Their plan was, among all their possible plans, was not, I don't believe, was one in which Bonnet finished the day alive. I don't think they had that planned. But she says no. She wants him to see justice or to go through the process. So they take him to Wilmington. And she says, quote, not for his sake, for yours and mine, for your baby, unquote. Surprise, Roger!
As you do. She's like, I'm just going to tell you now. This isn't how I wanted to. Clearly, I could have picked a better moment. However, here we are. That was a weird thing. She's like, I'm telling you now. Even though she didn't think it was the right time, but she told him anyway. Stop making out with your cat. I can hear it.
What, the purrs or the kisses?
Your kisses. They sound open-mouthed.
Oh, Lord.
And gross.
Well, that's disgusting.
I'm sure it is. I'm just telling you. It's an audible kiss, which means it sounds wetter than most
kisses. No, it does not sound wet. You have... Okay, no.
Go ahead. Say it. Say it.
I don't even know what I was going to say.
And that was chapter 108, moving right along to chapter 109, entitled All the News That's Fit to Print.
We love short chapters. This has more than a few pages, but it doesn't matter. It's a lot of, it's a little bit of fluff. So basically, it's an issue of the L'Oignon thingamajig, and the date is September 25th, 1775. Again, a date. Woohoo! Basically, this is the whole purpose of this chapter, or this L'Oignon, is to tell us there's a royal proclamation that was issued that said that the American colonies were in a state of open and avowed rebellion. This and that, bits and bobs, but ahoy. Also, there's an announcement of Stephen Bonnet being found guilty and sentenced to death by drowning.
And that was chapter 109, moving right along to chapter 110, entitled The Smell of the Light. And I feel like this should also be the smell of the herbs in Jocasta's time. It's this chapter, right?
Yes.
I feel like 110 was the stoner chapter.
Yes.
Okay.
Another date, October 2nd, 1775. They decide not to take Phaedra to River Run. It's, of course, not safe for her. It's not safe for her either. They plan to bring her to the ridge for her to recover. And then, you know, they'll give her a ticket to wherever she wants to go. By the way, they ask, or Diana writes, what did Ian do with the ear? And someone says, oh, he was supposed to feed it to his dog. Well, maybe we'll find out one day. So they want to try to get Jocasta to free Phaedra. Fast forward, they're at the ridge already. Settled in for who knows how long, but a bit. And Jocasta, Duncan, and Ulysses show up at the ridge. They're there on their way to somewhere else. They come in and they see Phaedra and they are all shocked. We find out they're emigrating to Kanata. But why? Loyalists are being treated like poopadoo and are growingly outnumbered in their area. So Duncan sold River Run before it was seized, smart man, and he kept one or two warehouses on the river, but got rid of everything else, including the slaves. The slaves, the animals, like everything. And although Diana did not say directly what it was for, I'm guessing the reason he kept a few warehouses is that in hopes that if they were at least in production, no matter who owned them later after the war, if they still existed, he might somehow get like revenue from that. I don't know. It was probably a smart decision as far as, you know, selling before it was seized and then keeping hold of means of production in some capacity. So maybe that's what happened. I believe that's what happened. And why Canada? Well, Hamish McKenzie was there. And if you guys don't think you remember Hamish McKenzie, you probably do. He was the little boy whose paternal parenthood was a little shaky. By some, he was the son, the recognized son of Colum McKenzie and his wife. But we know Colum had inconsistent abilities down there, most likely. And so Donald, we have a Donald coming up next chapter. So Dougal fathered Hamish, but it's that dude. So after Culloden, Hamish and a bunch of others had gone to Nova Scotia. So their plan is to cozy up and find a place. And their plan, I already said their plan is, right? Well, their plan again. They have two plans. Find a place. And also, they're going to travel overland to Virginia and then take a ship to Nova Scotia. What's up?
This chapter made me just a little uncomfortable.
In a few ways or one way?
Well, just in the fact that Claire and Jamie showing up and being judgmental to either Jocasta or Duncan at this point felt wrong to me.
Say that part again. What felt wrong to you? Them coming there?
Them being judgmental about Jocasta's choices sexually.
Oh, got it.
And
okay.
And Duncan's choices specifically. I'm just like, that's none of your business. I understand they've made it their business, but it's also none of their business.
The business part, that's a little bit nebulous. However, the reason you could and should absolutely condemn both is not because they don't have a right to, you know, find love where they want to find love. It's not about that. It's about an enslaved person does not have agency. So even if they are in love, I'm not saying they're not capable of love. Of course they are. But as long as someone is enslaved, I don't care if they're in love with someone. If they're sleeping with their master, it's always a power dynamic relationship, and it's inappropriate. It's the same.
You're not wrong, but you have to remember we were introduced to these relationships through the point of view of the enslaved person.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said,
at which time I'm like, y'all get out of there. if the enslaved people have been the, not perpetrators, that's the wrong word, instigators or active participants in these relationships. I know there's a power dynamic also involved here because whatever, but Ulysses, we find out in the next chapter, has been free for a real long time.
Correct. But to the outside, and so there's is slightly different, right? And I'm not saying Fedra, like I never claimed Fedra. Well, I never did claim Fedra was raped by Duncan. No one's saying that, right? In the violence, emotional way, in the legal way of not being able to consent, she was absolutely raped by him.
Sure, but she also appeared to be, given her own word, the instigator, because he didn't think he could do those things.
Oh, I totally hear you. It's definitely a very interesting way it came about. He never forced it on her. Like I said, it doesn't matter if it comes through coercion or violence. I mean, obviously that's worse, right? You're piling on.
But being enslaved makes you incapable of giving consent.
Correct. When it has to do with your owner, absolutely. If you have an F buddy who's like another enslaved person, that sounds really bad, but another enslaved person, that is, you may both be enslaved, but that is agency.
You're right. But and we'll talk about this in the next chapter, but I forgot the beginning of me hating Ulysses started
okay.
in this book.
So Jamie asks Duncan to sell Fedra to him. And he does. He's
like, absolutely. Here you go.
And Jocasta gives Claire an... I didn't want to write... I don't mind writing it out. She gives Claire an herb of interest. Basically some Mary Jane. She's like, oh, where'd you get this from? Claire's all... Diana wrote, Claire, I found it through smell. I didn't even need to look for it. I could find it easily.
I was going to say, like, at first I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And then the minute the thing is, she never said what it was.
Well,
in the whole chapter, they never really said what it was.
When she said that I took it and I wrapped it up or something, she uses the word hemp. She does say hemp, but she never says Mary Jane.
She does, but she never at any point says, like... She rolled a blunt. She had a
doobie.
She clearly rolled a joint or a doobie, but it was like she never really mentioned it in those ways. She was just like, it was a strong smelling herb given by the way that she said, I found it. I smelled it before I found it. And Jocasta was saying, there's an herb in there that you might find some interest in. Well, she's like, you want a toke-toke pass, buddy? And Claire was like, no, thank you. I know exactly what that is and I'm good, but you please do. Because, you know, I don't physically know many people who smoke it for glaucoma, but I know people do smoke
for
it
pain,
for glaucoma and
for
eye
cancer,
issues.
Yeah.
So I don't personally know people, but I know that people do for those reasons.
The herb of interest was from Farquhar Campbell, which is like just kind of funny and interesting. And then Joe just flat out blind Joe rolls a doobie, and
right?
She is proficient.
She is skilled. She's proficient not only in rolling, smoking, but knowing when she needs to like ash her, yes, her little
ash
joint.
Her junk.
Like, for real.
Jocasta shares that she'd finally told Duncan about Fedra. And then that makes you wonder, I wonder if Duncan told Jocasta about Fedra, That's a whole different
they
thing.
They both appear
by
to know.
By the end of this season, no. By the end of this chapter, everybody knows everything. We can put it that way. So Ulysses was supposedly, they take for granted that he's taken off into the sunset, right? Or went off into the sunset. We learned that Jocasta had never actually seen Ulysses. So they started becoming secret lovers, yeah, after she was blind. Say it, what?
I said she knew she was a slave, though, because she freed him.
Oh, of course. Summer.
So she wasn't like mistaken.
She didn't say, oopsie, he fell in me. No, she knew he was enslaved.
He tripped.
87 times. No, sorry. Probably 1,400 times over 20 years he slipped.
Once a day.
Also, it was interesting that their relationship, if you can call it that, which I know what I said, it goes against what I said earlier. Their status, whatever that was, their interactions, their intercourses, began before Duncan died. Not Duncan. He's already whatever. Hector died.
Before her.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was some dangerous shizzle.
I mean, I don't blame her. Hector killed her.
Oh, no. I know.
Made her leave her child on the side of the road in Scotland.
Absolutely.
In exchange for blood money.
Yep.
So I'm good. He would no longer be the man of my heart at that point.
Yes. So we learned that she had never actually seen his face or any part of him. But she always knew him when he was there. Quote, he smelled of light.
I don't think that's what light smells like.
Jamie lies in wait in the barn. Ulysses is about to steal a horse and giddy up. But they have a chat. Turns out Ulysses says... He says, and Jamie totally believes, I think everybody believes him. Ulysses says he loved Joe, and he confirms that he'd lain with her even before Hector died. So Jamie's all, yeah. Okay. So what are your plans?
I mean, who wouldn't with the opportunity?
What, sleep with the mistress?
Sleep with anybody offering at that point. I mean, you can't go anywhere. You're stuck
That's
there.
True.
You might as well have
Especially
something fun
if
to
she's,
do.
If she's... Not she's definitely not barren because she gave birth, but she might be past
she's
her
barren
years. Yeah,
for sure. Which just pissed me off when he said, "Do you have any children?" Oh. And Ulysses says, "None that I would claim," which tells me you're an ass.
Well, there's more of that. So he confirms he lay with her before Hector died, and Jamie's all, "Okay, so I know you want to get out of here. What are your plans? Like, what are you going to even do?" And he says he wants to go to Virginia. Quote, Lord Dunsmore has offered freedom to any slave who will join his army, unquote. And Jamie's all, I thought Joe freed you. And he's like, she did. But the thing is, she did many years ago, but it's too hard to go through the process formally because you have to have a manumission request, whatever it is, has to be approved by the assembly. And then once it's approved, the enslaved person or formerly enslaved person, excuse me, has to leave the county or the state. Maybe I think it's a state within 10 days or else they are in danger of being enslaved again. Correct. And he's like, I could choose freedom or I could choose Joe. I chose Joe. And then Jamie's actually not the final, but I wrote final, whatever. Jamie's final question. So, dude, before you take off, where's that effing gold? And he's all
lucky for you, Ulysses. He's like, huh?
Exactly. He's like, what? Yes. And Jamie's like, okay. So he believed him there. And he's like, if you have no stake in the future, you have no reason to suffer for it. Such children as you may have, .. unquote. And Ulysses, to continue what Summer was saying, Ulysses says, yes, what children that I may have, they are slaves born of slave women. What can they be to me?
I'm just saying, I know he's not wrong
no,
there,
but he's
but
also
saying
not nice.
That makes him feel that he's better than them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, I wouldn't claim them. Yeah, I their moms and yeah, I made them, but I don't claim them because they're just slaves. They don't matter, which is just a really sad idea for himself. You know what I mean? His thought of who he was before, that he didn't matter.
This is the insidiousness of capitalism and white supremacy and all of the stuff that we're hearing so much about these days. The insidiousness, right? It's not only that enslaved people were, they had worth, quote unquote, insofar as what they could produce or do, right? Their actions or their production value. Not only, and that's by the white person, that's by the white man, the owners, right? That's by the white society or who were around at that time. A lot of people don't, at least I haven't, and I'm sure books out there exist, and I think it would be fascinating to read about. But what I am coming at this from is from one enslaved person looking at another. So while they are all in the quote-unquote same predicament, they're all enslaved, right? Someone like Ulysses, who was a house slave, an enslaved person who worked in the house, he was treated much better than people, say, working outside or working in the fields or something like that. I mean, traditionally, that's at least what we hear. I'm not saying it's not slavery. It totally is slavery. However, it is so insidious and so evil and so disgusting that, and I'm sure this ranking, quote unquote, it's not created by the enslaved Black people. It is created by the white owners, by white society, right? However, it is perpetuated by enslaved people. So this is a perfect example of that. He says they're slaves, born of slave women. What can they be to me? Like what, how do they help me? How does that help me? Or how is that meaningful, right? I can't help them, which is fair enough, but also they're no good to me. They don't help me, right? So it's interesting. You're right. It is a D thing to say.
I mean, it's also realistic. I get it. But at the same time, it's like the self-deprecation of a statement like that.
Self-deprecation? I don't think it's self-deprecation.
Well, I feel like it is demeaning of yourself to say those things.
It is self-demeaning, yeah. Self-deprecating is when you say, oh, I'm not that pretty. Like, I guess, quasi putting yourself down.
But I mean,
down.
He's saying those things about his children who are literally...
Well, let's look at the conversation. You're right. And that's something I did not mention. You mentioned it. So the reason Jamie asks him about if he has kids is, and the upcoming war and everything.
I'm positive that Jamie was preparing to say, do you want to take your kids with you? Please go take your kids.
Exactly. Or figure out. So you want to go fight? Well, maybe, you know, can you get your kids safe? Is there something else you can do? Right. Or maybe you want to fight because you want a better future for your children. And so we don't know what Jamie would have said, but because he says, if you have no stake in the future, you have no reason to suffer for it. So, okay, and now I just got a brain flash. That could have been something else. He's like, look, dude, if you don't have kids or if you don't have a wife and a family and something that you really absolutely have to suffer for, why the F would you want to fight in a war? Why the F? Now, I don't think Jamie was asking that. I'm saying that's a different way you can look at it. But because Jamie's whole reason of upsetting his life and going through all the shiz-poo-nanigans of the next three books, two books plus 10 plus whatever Diana writes, is because of his freaking family. He has no, the only reason he cares about the future of that area of land. I mean, yeah, he wants to be a good shepherd. He wants to be a good custodian for the land, blah, blah, blah. He wants to do right by people. That's him. That's just him. But the reason he takes so many chances, has, you know, goes into danger so much is because of his, for the sake of his family, his stake in the future is, if the future does not exist in the way it did when they were first born, right? If he cannot assure that his daughter's future exists, let alone his grandchildren, he doesn't know that right now. We don't know that right now, so pretend I didn't say that. But if he does not do what he can, there may not be a Brianna. So that's a very black and white way of looking at things, but you can extrapolate that to all kinds of things, right? So whether it's kids, whether it's, I don't know, you just want to be a good human, I don't know. But yeah, I don't think he's going after, I don't think he says any, I don't think he means anything bad to Ulysses by saying, I don't think he has any bad opinion of Ulysses wanting to fight to be free. Like, obviously, that we understand.
No, like he gets that. That's the whole reason he has a problem with enslaved people in general. Yes. Is because he's been a prisoner.
Oh, yeah.
And exactly. Living at somebody else's beck and call. You know what I mean? He's done that. He understands
the lack of choice.
What
yes.
that life is like.
Well, he understands to a certain degree, but yeah.
Well, yeah. No, he
prisoners,
was not born into
correct.
It. It was something that he...
Without any chance of ever. Yeah.
Correct. Right. There was like a moonlighting period wherein he understood what it was like to not have your own life.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
To live at somebody else's.
He's been incarcerated several times. He's been on the hunt.
Yes.
On the hunt. On the lam for 7 years, although he was technically free. He has not been indentured, but he has been imprisoned several times, and over many years, right? So yeah, absolutely. He has never been enslaved, and he will never know what it's like to be enslaved. However, yes, he has experienced certain things.
Not being his
connect,
own master.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Not having
what's the word?
Agency, autonomy?
Agency. That's exactly what I wanted.
Yes. Yes. So that kind of wraps up the Ulysses thing. Jamie basically says, okay, go. Die free at least. And so he goes.
And last but not least, we are moving right along to chapter 111, entitled January 21st.
1776.
I feel like this should have been for chapter 121.
21. Or something.
Yeah.
So the fam dam is prepping for the fire. Because if you guys remember, ever since book three, right? Or four. Three or four. Between three and four. Majorly four. We've learned about the January 21st fire that sent Roger and Brianna back in the first place. So the family is preparing for the fire. They're like, okay, we know what's going to happen on this day. We're going to clear everybody out of the house. We're going to just like for 24 hours or whatever, we're going to be safe. Even Adso is taken out of the house. It was so cute. And Mrs. Bug is told to stay home and not given many more things, but she was like, okay. So they gather in Brianna's cabin.
She listens to that,
girl.
Every now and again, she listens.
Girl. Yes.
Mrs. Bug.
So they gather at Brianna's cabin, not just with... So it's Brianna and Roger and Jem, Claire, Jamie, Adso, of course. I think it's Aiden, his little brother, and Amy. Right? I think it's all of them.
Sure.
So they're preparing for the fire, blah, 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 blah. And as they're gathering and warm and cuddly, maybe not cuddly, but slightly cozy, Brianna has a thought. What if it's this house?
What if this is the house that burns? What if it's any house?
On
what
the
if
ridge?
It's just a tree?
Oh, stop it.
What if it's the whole ridge in general? Like,
that's a lot of fire.
Good God. Are you just never going to have a fire ever again and just be cold?
Well, after going through all the available places, they're like, oh, if we go to the bugs, that's a bit. No. We could go to the empty.
That's a bit. No.
We could go to the empty Christie cabin. And I don't know, it was Amy and everyone else was like, that's very much no.
Yeah, that's
a summer no. So after going through all those available places, they decide, or Claire says, what if we're just very, very careful?
Right. What if we just stay where we
Good
are
Lord,
and just not burn our
Claire,
houses down? How about we just not burn
and
our
just
houses
pray
down?
Pray really hard. So in this, it's in this atmosphere, in this environment where they're praying really hard and being really careful, where Major McDonald comes for a visit. And it's streaming up. It is streaming. The water is streaming down outside. It's a storm. I don't know how much of a storm, but there's a lot of rain. I wrote, how timely. He has come to offer Jamie a command of a militia company. So while he's sitting there talking, Claire sees Adso moving stealthily. He's like on a ledge or a shelf or something above where McDonald is sitting. And I don't know if McDonald still has his wig on or if he's taken his wig off. I think it's on him. So Claire sees Adso moving stealthily over toward McDonald and he gets the wig. She takes the wig for its safety and goes outside.
Hasn't he done this before?
I'm sure.
Doesn't he steal wigs? Hasn't he stolen somebody?
He did something.
Somebody else's wig. It might have been McDonald's wig at some point.
And so she goes outside and Jamie is outside and she has a little chat. She's like, yo, what are you going to do about that whole militia thing? And Jamie knows the time has come.
I thought you said a whole militia. And I was like, what?
A what?
What is that? Is that like whole militia? Is like H-O-M-O?
Oh, stop it.
Militia.
Oh, I can't. Dude, my stomach hurts.
Whole militia. Okay. I'm there.
Jamie knows the time has come. He must out himself. He technically already has. But remember, McDonald didn't believe him. he must out himself again to McDonald as being someone for liberty. So he goes back inside and he's like, sorry, dude, we can't. You know my position. I'm declared for liberty. And McDonald's all, well, you know, I know, but I asked you because it's not too late to change your mind. And Jamie turns it around to him and says, well, same word about you, McDonald. It's not too late to change your mind.
Exactly.
And that was funny. So because...
Dig a little deeper, buddy.
Because he refuses the militia, McDonald decides to leave right then. He's like, in the middle of the backcountry, he says, quote, I will not take hospitality from the hand of a traitor, mum, unquote. Mm-mm. Oh, the timing and the cats. So really quickly after this, Adso has grabbed his wig in his mouth and run on by. And by doing so, or in doing so, he knocks something over and there are flames. So even though he's just called Jamie a traitor and refused to spend time under the same roof, that because this is all this happens under one roof, there ain't another roof we have yet, right? McDonald, first of all, he is a mensch. Whatever you think about him, he helps them out. So even though they're traitors, he's going to help them out. He doesn't want them to like burn down. Bree is... We're reminded. Heavily pregnant. I'd forgotten. So she's afraid with all of this.
How much time just passed?
Oh, between the chapter and now? That's a good point. Okay, so I don't have a date or a month for the damn tall chapter where she gets rescued. But it goes from there to September and then to October. And then in... this final chapter, it's January. So September, November, December, January. So that's 4 months. So if she's heavily pregnant, she's probably at least 8 months, right? Eight and a half months. So if it was 4 months in October or September, she must have been, so 4 months would be what? 10, 9 minus 4 is 5. So it was probably around April, May, or June that she was. And Adso runs off with his wig in his mouth. And as he runs off, he knocks something over and causes a small fire. There are flames. But McDonald, even though he just called his hosts a traitor, still helps them out because he doesn't want them to burst into flames. And we're reminded, because something happens here-ish, that Bree is heavily pregnant. So yeah, where did that time fly to? So when she first got the little... wiggle or the little flutter and, you know, the nausea, whatever, and realized.
I mean, when she was diving through the roof.
Up through the roof, yes.
She was just barely pregnant.
I mean, it could have been a month or two.
She was not with Stephen Bonnet for a month.
No. She was pregnant before she got to Stephen Bonnet, Summer. She was pregnant from Roger.
Yeah, she was, but she hadn't even missed a period when she thought she noticed it. Because she'd had no confirmation. She was just like, the last time I felt kind of like this, I was, oh, am I?
And that was when she was at River Run, correct?
Correct.
So let's say a month by the time she felt it. Or okay. when she was with Bonnet at that house or on the boat, whatever. Then even if that's a month, it is now January 1776. So let's say she's 8 months pregnant. She may not be 9 months yet. But let's say she's 8 months pregnant. As I was saying before, so she could have been early pregnant, April or May the previous year. And then because I believe she was rescued around April or May because we have those dates of the Loignon article or the whatever issue. in September, and then in October is when they're at River Run, and the Innises come to visit. So it's gone from October to January. So yeah, whenever she got impregnated, she's heavily pregnant in January, at the end of January. So she's afraid that she might go into early labor because of the drama of the fire, not fire, the drama of the cat and just everything, all this stuff. Like, can we please be calm? Yeah, bish, when you were the one who said it might be your house that goes on fire, like, how are you helping yourself? How are you helping yourself? You're not. So she gets a case of the hiccups and Roger scares her and she slaps him. I loved it. Thankfully, McDonald is, I guess, not. I almost said this. I'm trying to think. How do I want to say this? Because I'm probably going to express it incorrectly because I've never used this before, said this before. So you know how we've called BJR an equal opportunity sadist? I would say McDonald is an equal opportunity, or maybe a not an equal opportunity dude who's going to stay with somebody. Meaning, if it was the house has not changed. It is still Roger and Brianna's home, right? But when Jamie or Claire asked him to stay, he's like, I will not stay under the take hospitality from the hands of a traitor, Mom. So that's Claire. Yet when Roger extends it to him, he decides to stay because it's Roger's hospitality. Are you serious? I don't know what to call that. So maybe there's a better term, but whatever. He's definitely not equal opportunity. So whatevs. I don't know what makes him think Roger's not a for liberty dude, but whatever. Maybe because he's a wannabe almost pastor priester dude. Priester is German. Sorry. There you go. You're welcome. Maybe because he thinks that Roger is a man of God and therefore won't take sides or won't fight. So I don't know. Jamie, in the morning, Jamie and Claire, although it is dawn, Jamie and Claire go home. Everything is safe and sound.
And that was chapter 111.
Again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Annabelle E.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, please do at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you're interested in having any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can find that at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't joined our text community, why not? It's free. Text hello or something like that to 916-659-5112. And thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.